to Thursday's edition of Financial Survival, sponsored by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. Melody will be joining us later on in the program. For all your gold and silver needs, call us toll-free at 1-800-375-4188. 800-375-4188. For the next hour, Melody and I will be bringing you our opinions and commentary on the economic and political news of the day. Today is Thursday, January 20th, 2022. And by the way, happy National Cheese Lovers Day. More importantly, it's National Disc Jockey Day. Now, while Melody and I don't actually spin records on Financial Survival, we do rule the daily airwaves in our small part of the universe. So, please take a minute today, say a little prayer that your favorite news talk jockeys will have continued good health to share the many truths of the day. Let's take a look at today's market report. Now, after being positive for a good part of the day, as high as 1849, gold down about $2.20 in the New York after spot market at 1839. Silver, on the other hand, up 1.25% at 2453. Platinum up $15, 1.5%, 1051. Palladium, the biggest bounce, up 3% at 2,152. Take a look at the U.S. dollar index, up 0.33 at 95.84. WTI crude actually down about 67 cents a barrel at 86.29. You've got the bellwether 10-year yield actually taking a reverse after being up early, down, 0.07 of a percent, closing, or right now it's at, 1.818. Take it out a couple decimal points. The 30-year staying over 2, is down slightly at 2.13%. And the 2-year yield, the closest proxy, I guess, for the Fed funds rate, up slightly to 1.043. In the equity markets, we got bizarre day. I mean, it was up a good chunk of the day, all three major indexes in the U.S., just reversing to close. The Dow Jones down 313 points, 34,715. The broader S&P 500 down 50, 4,483 it rounds to, and the tech-heavy NASDAQ down again, 186 points at 14,154. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is today's DGS Coins Market Report, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. A lot of different news out there today. We talked on Tuesday's program how home builder sentiment is taking a bit of a hit right now. And it's no wonder. The National Association of Realtors monthly report released today shows that closed sales of previously owned homes in December fell 4.6% to an annualized rate of 6.2 million units. Sales down 7.1% annually. Now, full year 2021 sales came in at 6.1 million. That was an increase over 8% in 2020, and the strongest sales year since 2006, fueled last year by millennials. Now, sales could have even been higher were it not for an incredibly low supply There were just 910,000 homes for sale at the end of December. That's down 14% from a year earlier. At the current sales price, that represents a 1.8-month supply. A balanced market between buyers and sellers is usually a 4 to 6 month supply. So that is pretty low. Now, both the total supply and month supply are at all-time lows on the NAR's inventory count since it began tracking way back in 1982. Their chief economist, Lawrence Young, said that home builders have already made strides this year to increase supply, but reversing gaps like the one we've seen recently will take years to correct. Wow. Low supply also continued to put pressure on how home prices. The median price of an existing home sold in December was $358,000, an increase of 16% compared to December 2020. By price category, sales continue to be stronger on the high end of the market simply because there's so much more supply there. Homes of price between $100 and $250 dropped 23%. Those priced between $750 and $1 million rose 32%. And those priced above $1 million rose 38%. For the full year, the median price came in at just shy of $347,000. That's the fastest price growth since 1999 and also a record high. Now, again, median means half of homes sold were higher than that and half were lower. But with the price up 17% annually, the average homeowner gained over $50,000 in housing wealth or equity just last year. The average rate on the 30-year fixed mortgage in October, November, when most of December sales contracts were signed, was about 60 basis points lower than it is today. And that could account for the home prices having soared. And a lot of them are being purchased with all cash deals. 23% of all sales last year. So that is an interesting aspect. Still, first-time homebuyers appear to be coming back to the market. They're now making up almost one-third of sales after a weaker showing of just 24% a month earlier. These buyers may be rushing in, considering that mortgage rates are going to be moving even higher and that they could end up being priced out of that market. Ah, inflation. Big story of the last several months, huh? Well, certainly Joe Biden, just beginning his second year today, paying a steep price for high inflation. Pun intended, thank you. It's a problem that festered almost all of his first year in office instead of fading away as he and others like the Fed's Jerome Powell thought it would. Biden's $1.9 trillion pandemic relief package, enacted last March, drove what will probably be the fastest economic growth since 1984 and pulled the government's headline unemployment rate down to 3.9% at a quicker pace than experts predicted. But after unprecedented government interventions and all these supply chain disruptions, inflation running at a near 40-year high of a little over 7% right now. And that has soured Americans' feelings about the president, even though, as we know, presidents have generally little to do with the rise and fall of most economic metrics, this included. But it's left Biden trying to retrofit a policy agenda now about winning the future into one that can fix inflation. The mix of a strong economy and high inflation has created a big paradox for his early presidency. Most U.S. households feel confident about their own finances, but they're worried about the state of the national economy that have been a big drag on the president's popularity. Now, yesterday, Biden acknowledged at a news conference that we need to get inflation under control. He said it's going to be painful for a lot of people in the meantime. Metrics like Langer Associates Consumer Comfort Index highlight the problem. It shows a worsening gap between people's optimisms about their own situations and their pessimism about the national economy and the climate for buying big goods. December poll from the Associated Press and the NORC Center for Public Affairs Research found that just 35% of Americans described the national economy as good, down from 45% in September. Percentage calling their personal financial situation good at 64% has really barely budged in the polling since before the pandemic began. And a poll this month found that just 37% of Americans approve of Biden's economic leadership, but saw that they're blaming him for the overall economic conditions while not crediting him for their personal situations. The White House view is that families recognize their own economic circumstances have improved, but there's a sense that everything else just isn't working. They point to the decrease in institutional trust and political polarization as a possible explanation for this trend. Well, the Fed expects that inflation rates will fall in the second half of this year as it raises interest rates, beginning as early as March. Possibly, over 90% now of Fed watchers believe that will happen then. Although by the end of the year, inflation will still probably be above the Fed's 2% target. White House is pinning its hope on the idea that the direction of inflation tends to matter more to voters when prices are elevated. That suggests that Biden could benefit if prices fall, then stabilize at that lower rate and people put a greater emphasis on their own well-being. We will see. It's a very difficult political climate in any event. Okay, look, you've waited long enough. It's Thursday, and you know what that means. The government's latest jobless claims report is out. And weekly claims took an unexpected turn higher last week in a potential sign that this pandemic, the latest pandemic surge with Omicron, was hitting the employment picture. Initial filings for the weekend of January 15th totaled 286,000, well above economists' estimates of 225,000, and almost a third, 33% higher than the previous week's 231. In fact, the total was the highest since the week of October 16th last year. And it marks a reversal after claims just a few weeks ago hit their lowest level in more than 50 years. Mike Lowengart at D-Trade said that with hiring challenges, employers are likely trying to hold on to their workforce. So this could be a short-term surge in jobless claims. Well, we'll see. Because with the quit rates, the voluntary quit rates, quit rate being so high, that could be a big challenge holding on to employees. Now, continuing claims, which run a week behind the headline data, also shot up, rising 84,000 to 1.64 million. One bright spot in the data showed that the four-week moving average for continuing claims, which irons out this weekly volatility and tends to show a slightly longer-term trend, declined by over 55,000 to 1.66 million, the lowest since the end of April 2019. Now, for the most current weekly jobless claims, California showed a sharp jump, while New York reported a fairly significant slide. Total recipients of all unemployment compensation programs rose by 180,000 to 2.13 million as of January 1st. Of course, jobless claims are seen as a leading real-time gauge of the employment picture, which has brightened in some respects, but is still largely experiencing multi-trouble spots, particularly as employers try and fill these gaps, these vacancies numbered in the millions. And the government's U6 unemployment rate, a more accurate gauge than the headline rate, is still over 7% after a record year of non-farm payroll growth. And the total employment level remains almost 3 million below where it was before the pandemic started about 2 years ago. Labor force participation also remains well below pre-pandemic levels, with the current 61.9% rate, 1.5 percentage points below the pre-pandemic level. Now, the labor force has contracted by nearly 2.3 million during this period, essentially meaning that over 2 million Americans have stopped looking for full-time jobs. Overall, there are an estimated 11.4 million unemployed Americans. Now, in a separate economic report today, showed manufacturing activity expanded faster than expected in the greater Philadelphia region. The Philadelphia Fed's Outlook survey registered a reading of 23.2. It's a measure of the percentage point difference between companies reporting expansion versus those reporting contraction. The estimate had been for 18.5. Now, just 16% of companies surveyed said they expect decreases in activity in the coming month, with gains coming in new orders and futures shipments. And consistently, the future employment index stumbled 19 points to 38.4, but that still reflects pretty decent expectations of future employment growth. Inflation, however, remains the issue. The future prices paid index surged 23 points to 76.4, its highest level since 1988. Okay. A few seconds before our break, a new intelligence assessment, the CIA has ruled out that the mysterious symptoms known as Havana syndrome are the result of a sustained global campaign by a hostile power such as Russia aimed at hundreds of U.S. diplomats. In about two dozen cases, the agency said it can't rule out foreign involvement. That includes many of the cases that originated at the U.S. Embassy in Havana. And still another group of cases is considered unresolved. But hundreds of others, the agency has found plausible alternative explanations. And that takes us to our first break. Please stick around. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. Dave Allen with you today. Melody may join us. She's having some technical difficulties in her studio. But try calling her at 1-800-375-4188. No one answers. She's on the line helping another client. Leave a message. She's prompt in getting back to you. She can. Don't forget to ask her about any coin specials we're running. Now it's time for our weekly segment, Levity is Golden. Today's topic is about rich brazenness, or shall we say brazenness among the rich. On Tuesday's program, we talked about Edelman's 2022 inequality report and how it shows that the world's richest just keep getting richer, mostly at the expense of the rest of us. The report shows that the 10 richest men in the world, and they're all men, have more than doubled their wealth during the pandemic from a collective $700 billion to $1.5 trillion. But on the other end of the totem pole, the incomes of the other 99% of us, this is worldwide now, are worse off because of the pandemic. Millions of them, of course, outside of the U.S., having been thrown into poverty during the pandemic especially. Now, amidst this growing inequality, Germany's transport ministry has criticized a recent stunt that saw a Czech millionaire, this is a millionaire from Czechoslovakia, drive his high-powered sports car along a public highway at speeds of up to 414 kilometers per hour. That's 257 miles an hour. We're not talking about the Indianapolis motorway. A video posted online this month shows Redeem Passer pushing his Bugatti Chiron to extreme speeds on a stretch of Germany's A2 Autobahn between Berlin and Hanover. Beneath the video, Passer wrote that the stunt was filmed last year, so supposedly on a 6-mile straight section with three lanes and visibility along the whole stretch, quote unquote. Passer said, quote, safety was a priority, so the circumstances had to be safe to go, end quote. But car can be seen passing several other vehicles on the highway, and the light in the video suggests the cruise was at twilight. So while much of Germany's Autobahn network famously has no speed limit, the transport ministry said in a statement yesterday that it rejects any behavior in road traffic that leads or can lead to endangering road users. It says, quote, all road users must abide by the rules of the road traffic regulations, citing the first clause of Germany's road traffic law, which states that anyone participating in traffic must behave in such a way that no other person is harmed, endangered, obstructed, or inconvenienced more than is unavoidable under the circumstances. I wonder if that... That phrase, under the circumstances, might allow folks like Passer to get off on any charges. The ministry noted that the law also requires drivers to only drive so fast that the vehicle is constantly under control. Passer, who according to Forbes magazine is the Czech Republic's 33rd richest person, with wealth of 6.6 billion Czech crowns, that's equivalent to $308 million, roughly, suggested beneath the video that he placed his faith in more than just his driving skills during this stunt. He wrote, quote, we thank God for the safety and good circumstances as we were able to reach the speed of 414 kilometers per hour. The Green Party, which is now a junior partner in Germany's new coalition government, the first without Angela Merkel at the helm, called for a 130 kilometer per hour, or that's 80 miles per hour, speed limit across the Autobahn network in last year's election campaign. But that idea was ditched during talks to form the new coalition government. You got to think that some of those government officials must have been fascinated by Passer's stunt. Or perhaps they just want to avoid getting caught speeding themselves on one of their own future joyrides. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is this week's Levity is Golden. Watch yourself out there. Okay, here's the news that everyone's been waiting for. The IRS will start accepting 2021 tax returns in less than 1 week. According to the IRS's taxpayer advocate, filing delays and administrative headaches this season just might eclipse those of last year, which was, quote, one of the worst filing seasons ever, unquote. For taxpayers, individuals or businesses, especially those with complex or paper filings, this means headaches, delayed refunds, and mistakes in processing. One Treasury official said things might be more challenging even than what we anticipate, and what we anticipate is very, very challenging, using the death phrase death spiral to refer to one set of issues. Now, driving the news is this. The agency in charge of raising the money the country needs or uses or spends, the IRS collects 95 cents of every dollar in federal revenue, will once again be hamstrung. One revenue agent said checks are getting sent in and not being processed. A report from the Taxpayer Advocate Office warns of refund delays. The IRS is in crisis, according to the group. The IRS budget declined by, or has declined by 20% since 2010, even as the number of taxpayers during that period has increased by 19%. Pressures of the pandemic pushed the already underfunded agency over the edge. We're running out of steam, according to that same revenue agent. The IRS, which relies on some software built in the 1960s, be 60 years ago, is facing a big backlog of paper filings from just last year, including 6.2 million unprocessed 1040 forms. The IRS still doesn't have scanning technology, unbelievably, relying instead on humans to open the mail and manually enter information into its system. That just seems so unbelievable. Last year, the agency received 282 million phone calls and answered just 29% of them, a little over 10%. It's worth noting that despite its limitations during the pandemic, the agency succeeded in getting multiple rounds of stimulus checks out, as well as monthly child care tax credit payments to eligible parents. And the vast majority of taxpayers did get their refunds promptly last year. So, you know, the tax credit and stimulus check processing certainly could account for a good chunk of that 6.2 million unprocessed claims from last year. Treasury Department, which the IRS is a part of, is hoping for new funding to come through. It's already making staffing moves in anticipation of getting as much as $80 billion more from the Biden Build Back Better legislation. Here's the thing, it hasn't passed yet, and its chances of passing are fading more and more. So the bottom line, bulk of the issues with tax filing season involves paper filings. If you can file electronically, especially using direct deposit, do that. And do file as early as you can before the April 15th deadline. And be careful filling out your return, because mistakes will jam up the process and delay any refund that you may be eligible for. On Tuesday's program, we talked about Delta and United Airlines threatening flight cancellations because of the proximity of new 5G technology to airports. Well, today we're learning that some flights to and from the U.S. have indeed been canceled, even after AT&T and Verizon scaled back the rollout of the high-speed wireless service. Airlines warn could interfere with aircraft technology. This is onboard aircraft technology that drives their altimeters, little machines that show how close to the ground you're flying. International carriers that rely heavily on the wide-body Boeing 777 and other Boeing aircraft canceled early flights or switched to different planes yesterday following warnings from the FAA and the plane maker. Airlines that fly only or mostly Airbus jets, including Air France and Ireland's Aer Lingus, seem less affected by the new 5G service. Airlines had canceled more than 320 flights by last evening, certainly far less disruptive than during the Christmas and New Year's travel season, actually about 10% of the 3,200 flights that were canceled on January 3rd because of winter storms and airline workers out sick with Omicron and other variants. Still, 320 flights, big inconvenience to those would-be travelers. Now, a trade group for the industry, Airlines for America, said cancellations weren't as bad as feared because AT&T and Verizon did delay the rollout of 5G near dozens of airports while industry and the government try to work out a longer-term solution. Okay, here's an interesting story. We know that first Amazon competed with the malls. Now, years later, now that it's upended shopping as we all once knew it, Amazon's moving inside one of those malls that it helped to disband. The online retailing giant says it plans to open a clothing store in a Southern California mall later this year. It's Amazon's latest foray into brick and mortar, which already sells more than 10% of all clothes in the U.S. That's Amazon. The store, which will sell women's and men's clothing as well as shoes and other accessories, will open at Americana at Brand. That's a mall in Glendale, California. The entry into malls could be another threat to traditional clothing sellers because of the data and shopper insights Amazon may gain. Amazon says its algorithms will spit out real-time recommendations as shoppers keep scanning items they see. Shoppers can also fill out an online survey of their preferences for style and fit. That can be beforehand or during their shopping experience. Now, this store in Glendale will be about 30,000 square feet, similar to a typical Kohl's, but still about only one-third the size of other department stores like, say, Macy's. However, Amazon will offer more than double the number of styles as traditional stores do because only one piece of clothing will be on display, with the rest in the back room. Items are chosen by Amazon curators, who also use feedback provided by millions of customers shopping on Amazon.com. And we know Amazon unseated Walmart as the largest clothing seller last year during the pandemic as more people began shopping online. One Wall Street bank forecast last March that Amazon clothing and footwear sales in the U.S. increased by about 15% in 2020 to more than $41 billion. That's about 25% above Walmart, 11 to 12% share of all clothing sold in the U.S. Go figure, Amazon. It's been making a big push into fashion in recent years through its own labels. And in September 2020, it launched an online shop called Luxury Stores. Shoppers at the Amazon Style Store can browse items on display and scan a QR code to see sizes, colors, and customer ratings. Pretty impressive stuff. Neil Saunders, who's managing director of Global Data Retail, said this prototype store could deepen Amazon's influence in the clothing sector, especially among clothing shoppers who love the experience of exploring and browsing physical stores. And it could empower Amazon with more shopping data. But he also cautioned that Amazon's success depends on execution. I find it'll be interesting. If they only have one of each style of clothing, it's going to be, boy, someone's going to have to be paying. They're going to have a lot of store associates, available to replace those single items. I don't know if they're going to sell them off the rack or if there's going to be a sales associate there. You say, hey, I'd like this, and they have to go in the back and retrieve the clothing for them to take the checkout. That'll be interesting. One of life's interesting questions in this day and age, huh? Excuse me. Well, hey, all you paper investors. Hope you're ready to ride the rickety roller coaster. Tech stocks are bearing the brunt of the current equity sell-off, and the tech-heavy NASDAQ officially slipped into a correction yesterday after another decline, down more today. Of course, a correction is a term of art that Wall Street applies to a sell-off that pushes prices down at least 10% from a recent high. It's a shorthand way of describing a market drop that's more serious than your run-of-the-mill dip over 1 or 2 days. The NASDAQ topped out in November, not long after the Fed began making noise about shifting its attention away from addressing the pandemic's job losses and towards fighting inflation by cutting back its $120 billion a month purchases of treasuries and other government mortgage-backed securities. And tech stocks are considered more sensitive to rising interest rates, but something the inflation-focused Fed is widely expected to deliver again as early at its March meeting. And that stems from the fact that the tech stocks tend to have high price-to-earnings ratios and typically pay little, if any, in the way of dividends. So, tech stocks become a bigger part of the overall stock market. Whoa, a correction is going to have a much larger impact. Let's take another break. You're listening to Financial Survival. We'll be back after these few short messages.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cedarstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cedarstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
One more time, welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. As we went into the last break, we were talking about the NASDAQ entering correction territory and how its nosedive is threatening the broader benchmarks, the S&P 500 and Dow Jones Industrial. Well, that's not broader, but still a big one. The S&P and Dow Jones are about halfway to correction territory now, as the end of today has come and gone. The solution to this crazy volatility and downward spiral? Well, buckle up, unless you decide to dump those equities and buy more gold and silver. Gold's up about 1% in the first 3 weeks this year, silver up almost 4%. Call Melody at 1-800-375-4188. You'll be glad you did. And I guess this is good news. Consulting firm Milliman is reporting that the pension plans of big U.S. companies haven't looked as good as they are now since before the 2008 Great Recession. And that is good news for those employers and their workers. Now, a pension's funded status is a core gauge of its health. It's a measure of plan assets relative to its liabilities, which is how much money the plan needs to pay future benefits. Pensions less than 100% funded don't have enough money on hand to meet future obligations to retirees. Now, Milliman's analysis shows that the 100 largest pensions of public U.S. companies were 99.6% funded at year's end. That's the healthiest they've been since 2008 and is up from 90.3% at the end of 2020. Story similar among a broader pool of big companies in the Fortune 1000. Their pensions were 96% funded on average last year, according to another consulting firm, Willers Towers Watson. And that's the highest level for that group since the end of 2007, up sharply from 88% in 2020. Now, the dynamic, largely the result of stock and bond yields, offers some relief to retirees and workers who expect to live on pension income. Philip Chow, who's a retirement plan consultant at Experiential Wealth, says that the pensioner should have a higher degree of comfort. There's something to back the promise. Steadily rising lifespans and the pace of baby boomers literally hurling into retirement have posed challenges for many pension managers. Plans have to ensure they have enough funding to pay checks for more people for a longer period of time as life expectancies grow. However, there are rules and mechanisms in place to protect retirees. The Pension Benefits Guarantee Corporation, it's a federal agency, offers a financial guarantee if a private company can't pay promised benefits, if an employer goes bankrupt, for example. However, the PBGC itself, underfunded, caps those guaranteed payments, meaning some retirees could get less than they expected. That's happened a lot over the last 20 years. In fact, over the past 25 years or so, many companies have shifted away from defined benefit pension plans toward defined contribution plans like 401ks. Shift the responsibility of building a nest egg to workers. Other companies have offloaded their defined benefit plans to insurance companies. In any event, the rapid improvement in pension funding in 2021, not surprisingly, largely due to a strong stock market and higher bond yields, The S&P was up 27% in its third straight positive year. 10-year Treasury yields at the end of the year were at 1.5% after beginning the year at below 1%. And investment-grade corporate bond yields also rose. This had a two-pronged effect. Stock returns buoy pension assets, while bond yields reduce the pension's future liabilities. The rebound in corporate pensions is a stark reversal from the financial crisis of 2008, when pension funding among the Fortune 1000 fell significantly to 77% from 107% the year before. U.S. stocks happened to lose 38% that year, 2008. Some pension managers have shifted into more alternative investments like private equity and hedge funds since the Great Recession. They're generally riskier than traditional stocks and bonds, but sometimes pay higher returns or offer diversification benefits. Overall, there's an estimated $164 trillion in total unfunded liabilities in the U.S., public and private. But to be fair, there are slightly over $200 trillion in total assets. So at the end of the day, that comes out to an estimated net worth of around $111,000 per capita. Now, that's not a lot for the richest country in the world, but at least we can say it's positive. But try telling that to the millions of Americans with no assets or pension whatsoever. Now, the Middle East, where Secretary of State Antony Blinken says that talks with Iran over its nuclear program are at a decisive moment. He's warning that Washington and its allies may change tactics if a deal isn't reached in the coming weeks. Blinken said that the longer Iran fails to comply with the 2015 Vienna Accord, which is intended to rein in Tehran's nuclear program, the closer it would get to being able to build an atomic weapon. So Blinken told reporters in Berlin after meeting with senior diplomats from Germany, France, and Britain yesterday, we are indeed at a decisive moment. Adding that he believed modest progress had been made during the ongoing rounds of talks in the Austrian capital, but we are not where we need to be. And if we don't get there very soon, we will have to take a different course. Now, of course, not revealing what that course may be. The U.S. withdrew from the Vienna Accord under the previous president, reinstated economic sanctions on Iran, which responded by increasing the purity of uranium it enriches and its stockpiles in breach of the accord. Joe Biden has signaled that he wants to rejoin the deal. Germany's foreign minister, whose country remains a part of the deal, known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, along with France and Britain and China and Russia, echoed Blinken's words. She said, "Our objective is to maintain and to preserve the agreement, and above all, to make Iran see sense, and to ensure that it can no further increase its enrichment capabilities." And last today, the Treasury Department just dropped a hot new quarter featuring Maya Angelou with her arms dramatically aloft, posed before a bird's giant wingspan. In the first of a series, each depicting women on the back, George Washington is still on the front. Arrival of the long-planned quarter was met with joy tempered with bafflement. Some are asking, aren't we in a coin shortage? Apparently, the answer is complicated. For some time now, the U.S., among other struggles, has indeed been in the silvery throes of a slow-moving crisis of coin. Became apparent in the spring of 2020 when our sudden lack of desire to get breathed on forced many of us to stop using money in transactions. The Federal Reserve found that in April 2020, only one-third of Americans had made an in-person purchase within the last 30 days. and only slightly more than half of those people reported using cash. In previous surveys, nearly everyone had reported recently making an in-person purchase. We had ceased being cogs in the money circulation system. We were neglecting our role as the pollinators of cash. It was yet another supply chain issue, one in which the troublesome link was, yes, you and me. And with this disruption of the constant input of coins into banks and coin stars and cash registers, the currency output hiccuped as well. That's why in the summer of 2020, you saw stores posting signs to warn customers that cashiers wouldn't be able to make change. Stores were offering to buy coins from customers. Kroger stores were crediting change to customer loyalty cards. And people were charging into laundromats to use the change machines and then leaving, making the problem of finding quarters even worse. Just last week, I saw an example of this at the local car wash. Someone had gotten out of a pickup truck with a couple of dollars, I don't know how many, was at the coin machine. I was right behind him, got a load of coins out of there, got back in the truck and left. Hey, good for you, buddy. Meanwhile, the Fed started rationing coins to local banks, placing a temporary cap on how many they could order. A bit panicked, the U.S. Mint and the Fed introduced an entity called the U.S. Coin Task Force. That brought together government, retail players, commercial banks to make at least one aspect of the pandemic less painful and less prolonged. The group included friends and competitors with a vested interest in the fate of coins like Coinstar and the armored car people. Brinks makes a big chunk of its revenue from ATMs and running money. A pillar of its cash-moving business is transporting new currency in and around the Federal Reserve System. And in the summer of 2020, this task force agreed on a diagnosis that we lazy Americans were simply refusing to exchange these coins frequently enough, and that was creating a dramatic deceleration of coin circulation through the supply chain. This is their words. In other words, there's really no shortage. America still had tens of billions of dollars of coins. It just so happened that, like murder in the movies, or the murderer in the movies, they were in your house right now. But the reasons our coins were building up in our piggy banks and under our couch cushions turned out to be greater than simply our lack of in-person shopping. In the U.S., while our bills have mostly remained a transaction currency, you give them a 20 at the deli and get a bacon and egg on a roll. Our coins worth just little bits of money are mostly a settlement currency where the deli gives you back the difference in change. Well, for many of us, we'd only be bothered to return that change to our economy when it's time to do laundry or go to the car wash or when we're not going to make it to payday. The coin shortage of the 1960s had pretty much one cause. People were hoarding silver coins because the value of silver was growing. It was worth more than an investment than as an actual currency. Well, if you were around then, you remember Congress moved fairly swiftly, well, in terms of government. By the next year, dimes and quarters were no longer made of silver. Case closed, right? Now coins are made of garbage. Apology to the zinc industry. And as currency, they're worth less and less to us every year. Despite our indifference, the U.S. Mint is ordered to keep up annual production, even if it means drowning us in shiny new coins that merely add to our collection of coins we don't use. But no matter how worthless they become, there's always someone who can make money off of coins, counting them, wrapping them, transporting them. And because of the constant flood of new free coins, there's no actual, as in financial, pressure on anyone involved to unlodge those old ones from our homes. In December 2018, the U.S. Mint privately gathered people in D.C. to brainstorm ways to reduce the country's dependence on constantly pumping out these new coins. Ideas include eliminating pennies or nickels or changing their composition. Well, that's not good business for the quiet interests involved, right? The zinc industry, for example, is heavily invested in the lifespan of the penny and pays American for Common Sense, C-E-N-T-S, for its, yes, lobbying powers. And if you change the composition of a coin, you'd pass on a large one-time cost to institutions that measure coins by weight or thickness or metal. And with the big issues of our time, we love to obsess about individual decisions, what we buy and how we throw it away, where we go or don't go. But when it comes to our slow coin extinction event, we get the blame as well. But it'll only be resolved when someone figures out a way to make money fixing it. In the meantime, it's true that scarcity takes all forms, including the lengths to which people will go to gin up some quarters. In December, Asia Lands went home for Christmas in upstate New York, and in a classic clear family coin jar, her mother had been stockpiling a small fortune in change. Mom passed her a Ziploc bag full of coins in exchange for Venmo. That ended one household's crisis, for now anyway, and their Christmas was mostly successful, although the family reportedly lost a few members to positive virus tests along the way. So their Christmas was very small, with a modest holiday-sized dinner. But Land said, at least I got a bunch of quarters out of it. Well, that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back next Tuesday. Melody will be back tomorrow with Butch. Also be on the lookout for our weekly Rudder Rush of Gold and Silver blog in your email inboxes after the sun next rises. Thanks as always to our engineer, Todd. I'm Dave Allen. Thanks for listening to Financial Survival. And please, please be safe out there. Bye-bye.